All right, everybody, thank you for joining me tonight. It's Dave McGlynn with another Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. A couple months ago, I had a similar situation I'm dealing with now, so I promise again, hopefully I'm fortunate that I haven't gotten the COVID yet, and if I had it already, I just didn't know, but I was tested, and that was negative. However, I'm dealing with like a chest cold, nasal thing, so you're going to hear it in my voice. It's that time of season, sorry. So, well, don't worry, we'll social distance, though, you know. So anyway, for those of you that are joining for the first time, I want to say thank you. I want to say welcome. Tonight is not like my normal show. So normally I talk to people about networking opportunities, talking to different leaders throughout the fire service, throughout the military, throughout the police service, all that, different leaders throughout the world, throughout our great country. And we talk about different things that they've encountered and obstacles that they've gone through and how they've gone through them and different advices that they would have for the audience, which is you. Tonight, I'm joined by a dear friend of mine and a brother of mine. And tonight's topic is going to be about suicide prevention and awareness, different things that we go through and see in the fire service. So before we do that, I'm going to throw out a disclaimer. So one, to protect my friend and his, ethical profession. We're not going to talk about or name the department that he works for or specific people in name for obvious reasons. But he's willing to share his story because our hope is that we can shed some light on stuff and we can create a talking point here. And, you know, hopefully we can try to maybe help somebody through the show. We're going to have some fun. Him and I, we worked together years back and we always had a good time together. So we're going to share some laughs. But with that said, if you're one of them people, and those who listen to the show that are my regular audience, thank you, but you also know how I talk. So the people that I work with, the people that I have worked with, and the people that follow me and listen to the show, I have zero filter. So if you're one of those people that's going to try to make a mockery of tonight's topic and roll your eyes at it or maliciously try to, you know, give somebody the horns under the table about the stigmatic or taboo part of this tonight's topic, understand it takes my friend a lot of courage to talk about this story. It's an important thing. We don't talk about it enough in the fire service, so it's near and dear to me. And if it's a problem for you that you want to make a joke about it, then tune off now, because I don't want you to listen to the show, because you're not my target audience. You're a clown, and I don't deal with clowns. Go to the circus and juggle pins. So tonight, we're going to talk about something very important. We're going to talk about a serious subject that we don't talk about enough. I'm joined tonight by my dear friend, Matty Brown. He's a career lieutenant. Matt, thank you for joining me tonight, brother. I really appreciate you coming on and doing a show with me.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me. I know this is going to be a tough topic to talk about, but I believe it's going to save some lives. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. Guys, listen, so you understand, if it's not obvious, my brother Matty, he is from New England. So if you couldn't tell by his accent, that's where he's from, and it'll come out throughout the rest of the night, and it's literally one of my favorite things. One of the things I miss the most is you go, McMuffin! So I'm looking forward to that getting shot out at some point tonight, too. So, Matt, tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and what inspired you to join the fire service?
Well, Dave, yeah, I'm from Rhode Island. Been involved in the fire service since I was a teenager as an Explorer Scout. Then right after high school, became a volunteer firefighter. I still volunteer, and I'm also a paid firefighter. And I know that might upset some of my union brothers that I'm a paid firefighter and a volunteer, but let it be known that the community I volunteer for has no paid firefighters, so I'm doing my ethical duty to my community to help out. And my older brother was a firefighter. We worked together for many years before he retired, and he was the one that actually inspired me to get involved in the fire service at a young age.
Yeah, nice. And I know that story about you. It is nice to – I always say with people, you know, it's nice to hear that story, how they got into the fire service. Some people, at least with their dads, with an older brother, grandfather, or some just got into it. You know, I always like people – sharing that part of it, because the target audience, there's a bunch of us coming from all kinds of different backgrounds. So you know, it's nice for somebody listening to hear that maybe they also kind of got into it the same way you did. So thank you. So like I said earlier, tonight's episode, we're covering suicide awareness and prevention. So it's an important topic. It's a serious thing. So before I get into it, I also want to dedicate tonight's show to a brother of mine that I worked with when I was at West Point. He was an MP, Sergeant Pavard, and unfortunately, we recently lost him due to this type of sickness and thing that we're talking about tonight. He was one of my good friends there. He was always a good guy with me. He looked after me and helped me out with a lot of things, and he was great for a laugh, and he's greatly missed. And so I'm dedicating tonight's show to him. So Matt, I thank you for telling your story, because you know, it's a serious thing. We deal with this in the military and in emergency services, and we need to talk about it. So with that, I want you to tell us your story, Matt. Just start wherever you want to start.
All right, Dave. You got to bear with me because some of this is very emotional, and I might choke up a little bit. So as I told you, I've been involved in the fire service for a long time and been to many, many, many fatalities. I can't even count how many, whether it be house fires where people are lost, car accidents. And I was also a tow truck driver and been exposed to many fatal accidents where they couldn't extricate the people at the scene because there was too much of a crowd, and they'd have to bring them back to the public works building or something like that to extricate them. So I've seen a lot of gruesome stuff and was never properly decompressed from it. So let's fast forward a little bit. It was July of 2018. We had a call at my volunteer department, in which an adolescent boy, teenage boy, was he was racing his dirt bike with some family friends, and he crashed into a tree at a high rate of speed and had massive facial trauma and chest trauma. We got there shortly after the police department did, and the police officer on scene had started CPR on the boy. So there was agonal breaths and breathing and stuff. So the boy was still entangled in his dirt bike. I assisted in detangling him. He was covered in gasoline, large, copious amounts of blood, and got him off the bike onto a stretcher, and we started loading him into the back of the rescue. When I say rescue, I mean ambulance. That's what we call it up here in Rhode Island. We call it a rescue. And just as we closed the rescue doors, his mother showed up. And this is where it all starts to get bad. His mom shows up and says to me, "Is that my son? I need to see him. Is he alive?" And I had to physically restrain her from climbing into the back of the rescue truck. And I could not tell her, you know, for obvious reasons, that your son's dead, but, you know, they're trying to bring him back. And there was no bringing him back. He wasn't coming back, Dave. And she, you know, she got a little violent with me, and I had to bear hug her and, you know, restrain her and keep her at bay, you know, so she wouldn't see her son all mangled up and bloody in the back of the rescue truck. And, you know, I thought I was fine. Fast forward to the following summer is Memorial Day weekend. I'm up on Lake Winnipesaukee with some friends and their children. And this friend is very dear to me. And she knows me very well. I've known her for years. I wasn't myself that weekend. And I started falling into a great depression seeing her kids having fun. And I started thinking about this boy and something about the smell of being on the boat and the exhaust of the boat, the smell of the gasoline on the boat started bringing back some of these memories and hearing the kids' laughter. And I've always been the fun uncle to my friend's kids, you know, the first one to rile them up, jump in the water with them and stuff. And I wasn't there. I couldn't, you know, and it's that depression hit me so hard and it came on so fast and rapidly. That I just couldn't find myself having fun, and I started secluding myself from the kids. We got back to the campsite, and I kind of hid from the kids. You know, and then I kept having bouts of crying. I would cry uncontrollably. And my friend kind of picked up on it. And, you know, I confided in her that night around the campfire that, you know, I was thinking about this kid and his family and how they wouldn't have these kind of memories anymore because he was gone. And there was nothing we could do, and I felt so guilty spending time with my friend's kids. You know, I don't have any kids of my own, but I treat these kids like they're my own, and I felt so guilty that I couldn't help save this kid. There was nothing we could do for him. You know, and it just got really bad. I don't know if you want to ask any questions now, Dave, but I can keep going on. This is
take your time, brother. You need a break for a second. I'm all right with it. You know what I mean? It's a tough story to tell. Like I said, I'm glad you're doing it. I'm good. I'm ready when you are. If you want to take a minute to, you know, to kind of just get yourself together, take a drink or whatever. I would recommend Jameson if you have any, being that you're Irish. It's a fan favorite of mine.
That's going to be a topic I cover here a little bit in my story about the drinking. Because
about the drinking? Oh, maybe I shouldn't have brought it up then.
No, that's okay, Dave. my friend, I don't want to mention her name, but she works with animals, and she's an animal control officer, and she actually had a puppy with her at the time while we were camping. I can obviously mention the puppy's name, but the puppy was about 8 months old, and she noticed, you know, that this was going on and the signs of PTSD, because she's dealt with some people with it before, and she kept pushing the puppy towards me. And I'm an animal lover to begin with, but I'm like trying to figure out why she's pushing the puppy towards me. And she said, "Why don't we have the puppy sleep in your camper with you tonight?" You know, and you know, I'm like, "Yeah, okay." Well, Dave, that night I didn't have any night terrors. I didn't have any nightmares. And that was the thing. Before this camping trip, I started having terrible, terrible nightmares of the mom showing up and screaming. You know, "Is that my son? Is he alive? I just need to see him." And it would get bad. Dave, I started drinking very heavily just to try to pass out so I could get some sleep. And the alcohol made everything worse. That made the demons come out. I mean, I was hallucinating. I would see the kid in my living room. I'd see his mother in my living room. I couldn't get away from it. And being home was very difficult. All I can compare it to is being home in a haunted house. I didn't want to be home. I was scared to be home. I was picking up as many overtime shifts as I could at work. And I did, from Memorial Day weekend, the end of Memorial Day weekend, until the day I almost took my life, I did 17 days straight at work. And it's kind of comical, because the battalion chief asked me and goes, "Are you hiding from something?" And Dave, I couldn't tell them what was going on. As much time as we spend with each other in the firehouse, and we talk to each other, we joke with each other, you know, we play jokes on each other. There's like a stigma in our career, you know, in the fire service. It's too macho to speak out and say, "Hey, I have a problem. Something's going on. I need help." I couldn't do it, Dave. I could not tell my brothers I need help. You know, things are getting bad. I can't sleep. I felt safe at the firehouse because I'm with my brothers, but yet I could not tell them I need help. Excuse me.
Hey, good morning.
And that was like the hardest thing for me, Dave, was, excuse me, I'm choking up a little bit here. I couldn't ask for help. I could not ask for help. Well, when that 18th day came and there was no overtime, I had to go home. There was no overtime to be had, and I had to go home. And that's when the panic attacks set in. Holy shit, I gotta go home. excuse my language, I know you told me to try not to swear.
You're all right, brother. You're all right. Trust me.
But I started driving home, and the panic attack set in. I could hardly hold myself on the road. I started crying. And I found, like, the only convenience store that was open was Cumberland Farms. And, you know, not the only convenience store that was open. I'm just going to say the only liquor store that was open next to a Cumberland Farms. And, Dave, I hadn't smoked in, like, probably 15 years. I figured, oh, I need something to calm my nerves. So I ran into the Cumberland Farms, and I got a pack of cigarettes. And I'm like, well, the liquor store is right there, you know. Let me run in and grab some booze. So I grab a couple of nips of Tennessee Fire and a handle of Tito's. And I'm like, let me just do this just to calm my nerves. So I light up the cigarette, and, oh, what a horrible thing. You know, the cigarettes tasted like shit. I'm like, all right, let me get the taste out of my mouth with the nips. And I pounded down the 5 nips. And I was out of those. And, Dave, I hadn't said this yet, but that accident had happened less than a mile and a half from my house. So I would have to drive by the accident scene to get home. And that's mm-hmm. what was causing these panic attacks.
Yeah, because it's reminding you every time. I mean, not that it's not
exactly
on your mind as it is, but that's why you want to stay away from home, you know. You, the outlet for you is to stay at the firehouse because it keeps you away from having to face that. I got it.
That was exactly it. I mean, even though this didn't happen with my career department, it happened with my volunteer department. And I had stopped volunteering. I avoided volunteering, and, you know, some of the guys at the volley house were even asking me, hey, what the hell's going on? Where are you? Where you been? Oh, I've just been working a lot of overtime. I was making excuses for everything. So by the time I got to the area where the accident happened, I was pretty well in the bag, you know. All the nips were gone. I already cracked open the handle of Tito's, and I'm down in it. And by the time I got to my driveway, I'm shit-faced. So I pull into my driveway, and I didn't want to go in the house. You know, obviously, bad things are going on in there. Wanted to stay the hell out of the house. So in my garage is my gun safe, and gun safe's at the back of the garage. So I pop the garage door open, walk in the garage, and I get my 12-gauge shotgun. And obviously everybody knows what started happening next. I loaded a round in it and walked out into my backyard by my hot tub and my deck. And I was going to blow my brains out on my deck. And I started leveling the gun up underneath my chin. And I swear it was divine intervention. My friend called me. She has a very distinct ringtone on my phone, so I knew it was her. And we have a very very funny relationship. We're like brother and sister. And, you know, it's kind of like how you and I joke around, you know. First words out of her mouth was, what's the matter, douchebag? You know?
Yeah.
And I couldn't talk, Dave. I could not talk. As much as I tried to get the words out, I couldn't talk. So she knew something was going on. You know, obviously, it's the same friend from the camping trip. She knew something was going on. She knew something was bad. So she's like, listen, if you can hear me, just push a button on the phone so I know you're there. And she kept me on the phone for like 15, 20 minutes. I don't know how long. And she goes, I got to hang up with you for a second. I got a customer. And I'm like, okay. So I push the button on the phone again. She hangs up. We hang up. And then it's like the old lady that had to call the ambulance or the rescue. She sees her house is dirty and has to start cleaning. Well, I had some brick pavers that I was putting around my hot tub that I never finished. And I'm like thinking to myself, I can't kill myself. These pavers aren't out here. You know? And I'm like, this is going to look like shit. They're going to pick up my dead body and all these pavers and everything.
Yeah,
so I start
yeah.
doing the pavers, and I don't remember how much time had passed. The phone rang. It was my friend again. I put it on speakerphone, and I still couldn't talk. I started putting the pavers around it. And as I'm putting the pavers around it, I could finally talk again. And we're just bullshitting about random stuff. I mean, stuff I can't even remember. And she's just trying to keep me occupied. Well, little did I know that she told her boss, I got to go. And I'm good friends with her boss also. I got to go. Matt's got a little problem with some PTSD or something. I got to go. And, you know, there was no hesitation. She took off. She made the hour and a half trip to my house. She lives an hour and a half away. And that's how much of a good friend she was. There was no hesitation. She got in her car and took off, and she loaded up all of her dogs. She's got three dogs. Well, little did I know that she was driving here. And again, she says to me, she goes, oh, I gotta hang up with you. I got another customer. And a couple of minutes later, I see all of her dogs parading through my yard. And then she came over and gave me like this biggest bear hug and a kiss on the cheek. And it's like, buddy, I got you. Whatever this is, I got you. We're going to get through this. So I'm like, okay, yeah. She ended up putting me to sleep because obviously I was drunk as a skunk. She put me to sleep, and while I was asleep, she went through my phone. Excuse me. She went through my phone and got the numbers of my fire chief from my career department. And she ended up taking all my guns. She saw the guns. She took all my guns away. She knows the code to the safe. She took all the guns out of the safe, loaded them into her car, and she took them. She's like, you're not getting these back. You know, it's not that you're never going to get these back. You're not getting these back right now. She goes, I know you're a firefighter. You know more than one way of killing yourself, but I'm taking this option out of the equation. So the next day I'm going into work. And get into work, we do roll call and everything. And mind you, the guys at work, I've known these guys for years, just like you. They can read me. They know my body language. They know my sense of humor. And I'm a big ball buster at work. That's my way of coping with things. That's my way of dealing with things. Just like I used to call you McMuffin all the time, you know. these guys know me. But yet, I couldn't tell them what was going on, so I kind of shut them all off, and I secluded myself from them. I started secluding myself from my crew, my guys, the other crews in the station, and it was one of the captains on the engine company, who I've known since I started. He had since retired, put me in a headlock out behind the heavy rescue truck, and he's like, brother, he goes, I don't care if you get pissed off at me. You punch me, you swear at me, kick me. I'm not letting you go until you tell me what the fuck is going on. I've known you for your entire career here. You need to tell me what's going on. And I'm like, Cap, I can't do this anymore. He's like, what can't you do anymore? I'm like, I broke down. I started crying in his arms, you know. And he's like, okay, we need help. What's going on? And I told him about the nightmares and everything and the night terrors. And he goes, well, we're going to get you help. Well, at that same exact time, my big chief was driving up from another station, and my friend was on the phone with him. And as the captain gets the battalion chief, the big chief is walking into the station and is there something you want to tell me? And basically, between the three of them, I'm like, well, here's what's going on. Things have gotten really bad. I said, not that I'm drinking at work, but when I would go home, I would drink to excess to try to pass out, to only wake up with more vivid and horrible, horrible nightmares. And they're like, okay, we're going to get you help. So they got me in touch with one of the guys at another station house, that I knew very well, that I didn't know was a grief counselor. And I talked to him. I talked to the fire department chaplain. And then I talked to another dear friend of mine who's another battalion chief out of that house. And he's like, Matt, he goes, I'm actually becoming a psychologist to deal with issues of firefighters that are suffering with this as I've gone through this myself. And I never knew that about him. And he goes, I'm going to get you some help. he goes, we're going to go to the program that I went to. And he goes, and we're going to go as soon as possible. So, Dave, I think this was on a Wednesday or a Thursday. Monday morning, he was driving me personally up to Brattleboro, Vermont. And if anybody's listening and needs help from this facility, it's called Brattleboro Treatment Center. And it's the Uniform Service Program. And their phone number is going to be 1-800-738-7282. And the program that I was in is called the Uniform Service Program. And they strictly deal with firefighters, EMTs, police officers, and military services that are struggling with PTSD, financial problems, drug abuse, sexual abuse. And this all leads into PTSD and depression. You know, when I got diagnosed with PTSD, I said, no, there's no way I have PTSD. I wasn't in the military. Only people in the military get PTSD. Well, I was wrong. And like I had said earlier in the program, when I was younger, after high school, I started driving a tow truck and going to all those fatal accidents. From never being properly decompressed from that age all the way up until the child that got killed on his dirt bike, I had never been properly decompressed. And I'm not going to bash anybody with the state of Rhode Island and their critical incident team, but it always seemed like a Boy Scout troop that would show up, and they'd sing Kumbaya, they'd sit you in a circle. And from experience, you put me in a circle and you ask me to tell everybody how I'm feeling, I'm going to give the common textbook answer, yeah, I'm fine, I'm good, yep, so be it. They disappear. They take off. They never check on you anymore. Well, I know that they revamped their program. I haven't been involved with their program since they revamped it. But that was the old style. They used to do stuff. And I think it would have worked better is if they took everybody one-on-one. Because you're in front of your peers, and the same problem I had, I'm not going to open up in front of my peers. And that's part of the stigma. I didn't want to open up in front of anybody and say, hey, well, this is bothering me. That's bothering me. You know, I feel like shit because I saw this kid's brains all over the pine tree. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't know how to explain that in a group.
No, if you
took one-on-one, I would have been able to do it.
Exactly. And that's why I'm glad you're doing this show tonight also. You know, it's taking a lot of courage. And I hear, you know, you're going through it, and I appreciate it. But that's exactly it's not anything against our brother firemen, because we would do it too. You know, like we would almost try to like make a mockery of it or break the guy's balls if he or she were to show some kind of vulnerability. Like, well, you know,
right.
Maybe I am having a little bit of feelings because of this. Because I've done it, you know, like we had a call, a buddy of mine that I work with now. We had a call like 10, 11 years ago after I left when you and I were working together up in New England. You know, we had a guy that died. We found him. You know, he had already expired. You know, it was very obvious. And, you know, the chief had done the due diligence of going through the, you know, trying to ask if anybody needed help or anything like that. You know, and I remember to this day, you know, me and my buddy, you know, we were a couple Jersey guys. We made a joke about it, you know, like, well, what do we need help for, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And one of the captains was like getting all excitable over it. And we were like, oh, it must've been the first dead guy you ever saw. And everything. You know, but not that that particular case bothered me, but that is just how we deal with it. And that's the crappy
right.
thing of it is, yeah, who understands us better than us? You know what I mean? We're the ones that, you know, whether we have, you know, whether we're married, we have a girlfriend, whatever it is, you know, our regular friends. When I say regular friends, I mean non-firefighting friends and non-emergency services friends. You know, they can't understand why we're a little jacked up. You know, why we're a little screwed up. You know,
right.
like they don't understand our sense of humor. They don't understand our sarcasm. And I honestly believe, like you said before, you know, your ball breaking and everything is your way of coping with it. You know, sharing with you because we're on the subject. I've dealt with depression and anxiety for a long time, since I was a kid. Now, I don't have your story, and that's why I'm glad you're sharing it. And I love you for it, and I love you for trusting me to do the right thing by you by telling this story. But I've always been afraid to share that with people, so my outlet was humor. My outlet was being the jackass, being the clown, you know, being the funny guy, you know, because it was like my way of just kind of coping with it, you know. And it's just like that is the one thing. Is like you said, you know, if they would talk to you one-on-one, you would have opened up. Or that goes for almost every one of us. I'd be willing to
say would
say something if we were one-on-one. But that's the shitty thing is we won't say nothing in front of our own peers. And I hate that about this, you know. That's my goal with this show is that we stop doing that. If we need to talk to each other, we can talk to each other. We shouldn't be afraid to talk to each other.
Right, and I think it goes way back. I mean, my uncle was on the job in one of the big cities up here in New England back in the 1950s after the Korean War. And, you know, he retired as a captain out of there. And he said one of the things was, I mean, God rest his soul, he's dead now, but one of the things was is when they had a bad call, whether it was a bad house fire, a kid got killed or something, they didn't talk about it. They all knew that the next night they were all going to drink at the firehouse. And it was the junior man's job to go and pick up the liquor. He knew everybody's drink. He picked up the drink orders, and they would come in, and they would just spend the entire night at the firehouse between calls getting shit-faced. And he said he had one guy that had a terrible career, and they nicknamed him Rip Van Winkle because he would sit in the cab of the ladder truck in the jump seat with his gear on and just drink and drink. He'd pass out. The bell would ring. They'd go to a fire. He wouldn't even know he'd go to a fire until the next morning. He would see it in the newspaper that he was at a five-alarm mill fire or something like that.
Wow.
I had no recollection of it. And he said to me, he goes, Matt, always called me kid. He goes, kid. He goes, that's no way to be. He goes, you got to be able to talk about it. There's got to be an outlet for it. He goes, don't drink on the job. He goes, it's a new regime. He ended up selling insurance after he retired off the job to police officers and firefighters. But that was his way to continue helping. He always wanted to help the young kids on the job. And he would always tell them, don't drink. Don't drink on the job. But that was their way of coping with it back then. And I think, you know, it's a huge stigma with us, Steve. Like you were saying, is we're in such a rough type of environment, we're always expected to be macho, and it's so not macho to say that you need help or there's a problem or, you know, that you took that call kind of hard. Let's face it, we all love each other. We are a family, and we're the biggest dysfunctional family there is, but we can't say, hey, I love you. Look out for that, you know, be careful when you get on the truck going to this call, you know, it's supposed to be a bad hazmat call or something like that. Be real careful. We can't say that because then you'll look at it as like a pussy. And it's like, no, you can't say that. You can't say, hey, I love you, man, like you and I are saying right now. You know, you and I have a history. And, you know, I know when you say, hey, man, I love you. I know you do. And I love you too, Dave. But, you know,
thank you.
Firehouse, the guys are going to be like, shut the hell up. What's the matter with you two? Get a room. You know? The thing is, this all needs to change. This needs to change. And, you know, I don't want to say it's the pussification of the fire service, because it's not. We need to learn how to communicate. We need to learn to say there's a problem. You know, and it's not belly aching. It's not being a crybaby. And it's definitely not being a wimp or a pussy, because we need to say this. It's going to save your life. I mean, because I was afraid to speak up, it almost took my life. You know, and when I went to the treatment center up at Brattleboro Hospital, one of the biggest things they said to us was, if you don't feel something, there's a problem. You go to these nasty calls and you don't feel something, there's a problem. We're seeing people on their worst days. We are people's last resorts. When all else and all their hope has failed, they're calling 911 to get us there to save the day. And there's going to be days when we can't save it. And that's what kills us. It's not being able to help somebody when they're in need. And I know it destroyed me because I couldn't help that kid. There was nothing we could do for him. And I felt guilty. Like I said, that was my first kid call. And that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. And I'm losing track of what I was talking about. I was rambling too fast. But
you're right.
We need to be able to talk to each other. We need to be able to talk to each other in a group. And, Dave, I got to be honest with you. I'm nervous as hell talking about this because this is the first time I'm openly, publicly talking about this.
I know. That's why I keep saying thank you because I know it's huge.
So forgive me if I'm rambling on fast here. And my New England accent is horrible. You know, all my friends break my chops about it, including you. But, you know, they said in the program that if we don't feel something, then you're nothing more than an animal. And it's funny because the fire department chaplain had said that to me. He was, before he became a chaplain, he was involved in the Marine Corps. And he said he had a lot of his Marines that he lost them. There was a helicopter crash with two helicopters. One of the helicopters crashed. And he said some of the guys that didn't feel anything, that wouldn't talk up about it, they're either in jail or dead now. And they're in jail for, like, manslaughter, murder, stuff like that, because they became animals, because they didn't want to feel anything. They tried to push it away. And the other guys that didn't become the animals and kill people, they ended up killing themselves. And that's no way to be. I'm not saying any of us are going to hurt anybody because that's not the type of job that we do. We're in the job of saving lives and protecting people. But we need to learn how to save our own lives and protect us.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing behind what we're doing tonight is we need to protect ourselves and help ourselves. Because who saves us? Who saves
us? Exactly.
You know, and there's always a saying I've always had, and I'm sure you heard me say it when we worked together, is we are our brother's keeper, or I am my brother's keeper. And what does that mean? That means that we need to, if I didn't have that captain that looked out for me, we need to look out for each other. And he was picking up on the signs of it. And, you know, Dave, like I had said, I was so afraid to talk to my brothers about it. And then after I went for the treatment, and the guys finally asked me, they're like, hey, what'd you do on vacation? Well, I wasn't on vacation. You know, and I could talk about it more easily, and I came back to the firehouse, and I talked to my shift about it, talked to the other shift about it, and I talked to a couple of guys about it. And I'm like, so this is what happened. And Dave, they were so supportive. They're like, why didn't you say anything? And I'm like, well, I couldn't say anything. You know, my own brother that's a firefighter, he actually, you know, he kept saying to me, well, you know, you could have called this and you could have called this. And I'm like, bro, I'm like, I couldn't. I could not pick up that phone. I could not. It was like my hands were broken. I was crippled with fear. I couldn't pick up the phone and ask for help.
And that's the thing is, you know, people don't realize, like, you go through these things and there comes that psychological paralysis, you know, where I know everybody means well when they say it, like, you know, you say with your brother, but, you know, just for the people listening, like, when people go through these type of hard times, yeah, it's appreciative that people say, hey, you could have just called. I would have been there. Like, yes. But also don't make the person feel bad that they didn't, because in the moment that they were going through that, they had that psychological paralysis. It was like as if you just couldn't move. You know what I mean?
Why?
So, like, you don't know to call somebody. Either you're too afraid to do it, you're afraid of the reaction you're going to get, or you don't even know how to do it. You know, so that's another thing is the people who are listening, if you know somebody who's going through these, you also got to understand that they're not going to just come to you and talk to you about this. It's not that simple. You know, you can't just say, well, if they need help, they'll tell me. That's not how it works.
They will not. They will not. I can tell you from my own personal experience. And, Dave, that day I was going to commit suicide, I didn't want to die. I did not want to die, but that was the only way I could think is to stop the nightmares and the night terrors was to kill myself. I was so tired and exhausted. I just, I just wanted to get a normal night's sleep for once. And I wasn't sleeping good at the firehouse either, but I felt safe there. You know, and I think one of the reasons why I felt safe there was there was no alcohol there. You know, and I, like I told you, the alcohol made everything worse. But the thing is, if somebody's going through this, for anybody that's listening, somebody that's going through this, they're not going to ask you for help. They're not going to say right out, hey, I've been thinking about killing myself. I'm having terrible nightmares. You got to look at them. If you know this person and you work with them for a while, or it's a family friend or a good friend or brother or sister, pay attention to their body language. My good friend said she could tell there was something wrong with my body language. And I guess I have a very horrible body language because the guys at work can tell when I'm pissed off just by my body language.
Well, you're Irish.
Well, yeah. What's that supposed to mean?
Well, I'm Irish, too. I'm saying we wear it like a billboard. You know, there's no way an Irish person can hide if they're pissed off. You know what I mean?
It's a shrill. You know, but try to get us to talk about anything. You know, we'll live with something
wrong
for the lives to avoid talking about it. I don't know about you, Dave, but I've never been a great communicator. I suck at communicating, but that's the thing. With somebody dealing with this, with the struggle and PTSD and depression, the thought of suicide is not because they want to kill themselves. They want to stop something. They want to stop some kind of action or reaction that they're having. For me, it was the night terrors and the nightmares. I just wanted it all to end. And the drinking wasn't stopping it. So, okay, I got the shotgun in the garage. I'm going to go get that. And, well, yeah, that's a temporary solution to a permanent solution to a temporary problem. You know, and I'm sure everybody's heard that a million times. And the thing is, we're just taking that hurt that we have and we're putting it on our loved ones and our coworkers, our friends, our brother and sister firefighters. Because, after I told my story, one of the chiefs said to me, he goes, do you know how devastated and crippling that would have been to this department? He goes, Matt, whether you know it or not, there are so many guys on this department that love you. They'll never say they love you, but they love you. He goes, including myself. He goes, I consider you a dear friend. You know, and I talk to him quite frequently. And he goes, Matt, he goes, I would have been crippled. I would have been crippled if you'd done that. You know, and he confided in me with a lot of stuff that happened to him in his young career when he first started out as a firefighter. Also, he had a similar situation. And he shared that with me. So we kind of have that connection now. But I just want to say, just pay attention to people's body language. Pay attention to their attitudes. If you see them secluding themselves from families, like I secluded myself from my crew. I wasn't watching TV with them anymore in the day room. I wasn't eating meals with them. I started avoiding everybody, and especially my friends with children. I would hide from them. I would make excuses that, oh, I'm busy, I can't come. One of my dear friends, I would want to spend time with her and her kids, and, you know, I'd make that hour and a half trek to go see them, and then I would hide. I would hide in their house and avoid the kids. And it wasn't because I wanted to hide from them. I had this fear that I couldn't protect them. If something happened, I couldn't save them. I couldn't protect them. I wanted to, like, hide from them. But yet, I wanted so bad to go up there and see them, but I was scared. And I know none of this makes sense, but in my head, this all made sense. And this is all part of the condition. Just pay attention. And if you notice things are happening, ask questions. Get the person alone and start asking questions. Ask them if they need help. This is the elephant in the room. This is the hardest thing in the world to ever talk about. It's very difficult for me to talk about. Ask questions. Have you been thinking about committing suicide? Are you depressed? What's going on? You can talk to me. And that's the thing is all the guys in my station, my firehouse, on my department, they know they can talk to me and it's going to stay confidential. I'm never going to talk about it outside of them. The only time that I would suggest anybody open up to somebody else is if the people start talking about hurting themselves or wanting to commit suicide or hurting family members. If, God forbid, they decide they're going to become homicidal or something like that and have thoughts of hurting their family members, then it can't stay confidential anymore. Go to your, follow your chain of command if you have to. But somebody needs to do something, and that somebody's you. Start the ball rolling. Get help. If the next person in your chain of command doesn't do something, go to the next person in the chain of command. And don't wait around. Okay? If there's an emergency like this, and I'm considering this an emergency, somebody's talking about hurting themselves or killing themselves, that's an emergency. Get the ball rolling. If that person isn't taking it seriously, like if it's a lieutenant, go to the captain. Go to the battalion chief. Go to the district chief. Go to the fire chief. Somebody has to do something, Or if you have to, do it yourself. Call one of the suicide prevention lines, the IFF Center for Excellence, Brattleboro Retreat. Don't leave that person alone. Okay? Stay with them. Don't baby them. Don't treat them like a child. They're still a human being. They're still a brother, a sister, firefighter, a police officer, whoever might be listening. I don't know if police officers or nurses listen to your show. But I know I have a few friends that are probably listening to the show tonight. But honestly, even if it's a spouse, the biggest thing is don't treat them like a baby. Okay? They're still a human being. They're still an adult. Get them the help. Stay with them. That night that I almost took my own life, my friend stayed with me the entire night just to make sure I didn't hurt myself. And one of the reasons why she'd called my chief the next morning, not only to report what was going on, was to make sure I went to work, to make sure I showed up at work. And she knew once I was at work, I was going to be safe. I was going to be safe at work, and I was going to start getting the help I needed.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Just be there for the person. I mean, I know everybody says, oh, yeah, you should have called me. They should have called me. Everybody can say that, but you need to be the bigger person and actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's such a problem now, and I think it's only getting worse because of the pandemic. In one of the local communities around here, and I'm not going to say the community, in the past 2 years, I believe they had 4 or 5 firefighters in that one community commit suicide. And they also had 2 or 3 police officers in the same town commit suicide. And then various communities surrounding the metro area, they also had firefighters commit suicide. And, there's a lot of reasons. And once this stuff starts happening, Dave, when I was in that program, I was in, with guys from all over the country, firefighters, police officers, sheriffs. And, we all shared our stories and we all talked to each other. There's many things that happen besides the depression and cheating on spouses, okay? One of the guys was cheating on his spouse constantly, on purpose, trying to get caught so his wife would divorce him because he didn't want his wife to live through the pain of knowing that he was suffering and the depression and everything. And what that's considered is it's a self-destructive activity. He was just trying to purposely make his marriage fail so that she would leave him. And then once she left, he could continue on his shitty journey of eventually killing himself.
Jesus.
Guys have gambling problems, drinking and drug problems. I mean, Dave, you name it. There was even guys hooking up with prostitutes. It's a very dark, dark thing, but it needs to be addressed. So if you notice a buddy, like, having a real bad gambling problem at work, might want to say something to him. I mean, don't be an asshole about it and be like, hey, what are you, got a gambling problem? Say, hey, is everything all right? You know, what's going on? Don't treat him like a child, but say, hey, is everything all right? I noticed you've been gambling on this an awful lot, you know? Something as stupid as one of the guys going to a strip bar constantly. You know, he's avoiding going home, but he's always at the strip bar. Oh, why are you going to the girly bar all the time? You know, what's going on? Why aren't you at home?
That girly bar, I love you. I'm missing you, man.
Yeah.
I know we're having such a serious talk right now, but you just called it a girly bar, and it was the greatest thing ever. What are you going to girly bar for? Yeah. No, you are right, though. You know, even that, as men, like we were talking before, you know, like where everything's macho, right? So, like, listen, I've been in the strip clubs before. I'm not going to lie. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, we all have.
But that is a pattern of something's going on. You know, you're not being like, oh, why you got to worry about the guy's business? If I got a buddy of mine who's got a wife and kids at home or whatever, and this dude,
right, and he's spending
regular
the whole
thing is going to the rub and tug joint or to the girly bar, you know, every day, there's a problem.
Shut up, Dave.
No, but you're right. You know, there is a problem. Those things are telltale signs. And real quick, Matt, while we're talking about it, I just want to plug some of these things because we are talking about the different outlets that are out there, right? So for those
right.
who are listening, whether you're going to help somebody or you need help, whatever, you don't want to go and admit it. So the Suicide Prevention Hotline, 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Call them, all right? If you're in the union, if you're in the IFF, the IFF has a program for suicide prevention, and the phone number for them is 888-532-7988. That's 1-888-532-7988. Now, these are just some of the programs that are available just for people that are going through any kind of hardship. Like Matt was just saying, you know, there's a bunch of things out there that it's not just that you're having suicidal things. There's different outlets to how you're going to deal with whatever kind of trauma, drama, PTSD, whatever stressor that you're going through, there's a bunch of different, you know, us as, you know, Matt, you know, us as Irish Catholics, you know, there's these temptations that are out there. And we use those as outlets to try to cover fill the void of the crap that we're dealing with, like going to the go-go bars or the strip clubs and, you know, going to the prostitutes or going to the casino, you know, and blowing all your money that way or burying yourself into the alcohol. There's all these different outlets. And if you're either dealing with that right now, there's help. But also if you're either a brother fireman, a sister fireman, you know, you're in the department with somebody, you're in emergency services, you're in the military, and you see, you know, that's what Matt's talking about, is you see people going through these motions of these outlets to try to fill those voids. They're not going to come to you and say, hey, I'm having a struggle. They're trying to, them doing all that craziness is their way of telling you, I'm having a problem and I need help. And it's up to you to try to figure out a way to try to help them. Now, not everybody is strong enough, and I'm not forcing people. Sometimes people aren't strong enough to feel that they have to do the due diligence of being the guy to step up and try to get somebody help. Though in a perfect world, it would make sense to just be able to just reactively do that. I also can understand that sometimes people just feel like they don't want to be part of that because they're afraid of the reaction they'll get from the person. But the next part of our discussion, Matt, is, and I want you to just talk about it, not just in your role as, you know, being in a leadership role and having worked with leaders and stuff like that, but also just in your situation. You were complimenting your chief, your battalion chief, that captain that you had, your best friend, you know, the girl. As leaders, as mentors, we do have that responsibility to kind of notice these signs and do something about it. We can't just put blinders onto them. That's the shitty thing, is because you're actually making the situation worse if you're in the position to try to get this person the help and you want to instead put the blinders onto it. So, Matt, you know, my next question for you is, what is the importance of a leader or a mentor, you know, what's their role? What's the importance in their role in dealing with something like this? Matt, are you there? I hope I didn't lose Johnny. Nope. There we go. You there?
David.
There we go.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right, brother. I think it's important as, you know, a company leader to pay attention to you guys. Like you, like we were just saying, you know, if you notice the guy's starting to get into a very self-destructive pattern, step in, say something. If you notice the guy is segregating himself from the crew, he's not participating in crew activities, whether it's dinner, a movie night, you know, everybody knows in the firehouse at 11 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, excuse me, 11 o'clock in the morning, every firehouse in the country watches The Price is Right. If he's not in that kitchen or in the day room watching The Price is Right, there's a problem. Find out what's going on. All right. Just be there. Be like a big brother to him or a big sister. Find out what's going on. All right. We all know it's tough to put personal things and be a company officer. Put those two aside. You know, and a lot of your company officer stuff, they teach you that you have to not be a friend anymore, but you have to be the company officer. Well, see, I think that's wrong. I think you do have to be a friend. If you notice something's going on, get in their personal business. Find out what's going on. And if things are really getting bad and you're really close to this guy, you know, I have guys on the job that I'm their kids' godparents and stuff like that. Call the spouse. You know, if they have older kids, call the older kids. Find out what's going on. Hey, you know, what's going on with Bill? You know, is he got a problem at home? Is he gambling? Has he been home? Is he avoiding going home? You know, there's a lot of signs to pick up on. Find out if he or she is acting out of the norm. You know, and then start the ball rolling yourself. All right, ask them if there's something going on. The ball rolling, and get the help. You know, between Dave and myself, we mentioned these three different places that you could contact, whether it's Brattleboro, the IFF Center for Excellence, or the Suicide Prevention Line. Get the ball rolling. If the fire department has a chaplain, you might want to contact the chaplain. You know, it might be something as simple as, you know, talking to the fire department chaplain. You know, maybe the guy just needs a little guidance in his life. But if it starts becoming like where he's suicidal or she's suicidal, and I'm sorry to my sister firefighters if I keep saying he, because, you know, I came up in the fire service when there was no females, and, you know, I know we get a lot of females now, so please forgive me for saying he constantly. You know, we need to look out for each other. Like I said before, we're a big dysfunctional family. You're going to realize that one of the members of the family isn't participating like they usually do. And when that's not happening, you need to step in and intervene. All right.
Yeah. You know, and I'm glad you say it, you know, because one, you're speaking from your own experience in it. Yeah, but two, like, that's the thing is, guys, you know, for the people listening, you know, if you need the help and you're too afraid to reach out to somebody, you know, like, it's understandable. But you listening to the two of us talking, you know, especially Matt, you know, I mean, him having gone through it, you know, and you know, if you don't talk to somebody, you got to pray that there's somebody close enough to you in your life. You surround yourself with, you know, these support mechanisms, like I was talking to you before we started the show, Matt. You know, you had the fortune of having some great brothers on the job with you and good leaders. And that girl that you're friends with, you know, your best friend there, you know, she's an angel. You know, we don't all have sadly, some people they don't have that luxury. And I'm not trying to say you had a luxury because you dealt with the demons. You know what I'm saying when I mean
yeah.
You had a great
support
mechanism around you. And it was, and you were fortunate that you're such a great person that so many people cared about you and noticed there's something off here. Some people, they get so introverted that people aren't even able to recognize that. And that's why I stress not to make the show about leadership, because the tonight's topic was what it was. But there,
that's
in
right.
This business, we have people that are in some form of kind of, you know, leadership. And to that, leadership is a responsibility, okay? Your job is you are responsible and given the opportunity to be in a position of influence, and that's influencing for the good and protecting your people. And it's not just how cool you sound on the radio or how fast you can pull hose sometimes,
right.
But it's also about looking out for the well-being of your people and knowing all your people. I've been fortunate and blessed over the years to have climbed the ladder to get in leadership roles, right? But with that, and you know me, Matty, well, go ahead, brother. What were you saying?
I was going to say, Dave, I'm talking about leadership, you know, that I'm very good friends with me. He says to me all the time, he goes, you don't have to have a bugle on your shirt to be a leader. And what I'm going to say by saying that is, even if you're a junior guy in the department and you've been around a senior guy, one of the, you know, mid-level guys or firefighters, I keep saying guys, and I'm sorry to all the female firefighters there. If you're one of the mid-level firefighters, you know, or you're the junior guy, and you see one of the senior firefighters, or the mid-level firefighters having a struggle, find out what's going on. All right? Step up. And like I said, you don't have to have a bugle on your shirt to be a leader. All right? You could just be there for that person. Find out what is going on. If you notice they're acting out of the norm, they're being more of a jackass than usual, or a real jerk, and everything's kicking them off. You know, not so much that they're being verbal and abusive, but they're just being, for lack of a better word, a douchebag. If they're being a real douchebag, find out what's going on. Because there has to be something that's ticking them off. And, you know, part of my thing, Dave, I was also very irritable. I would get pissed off about the stupidest things. Like, I'd be in the middle of helping cleaning the rig, and the bell would go off or something. I'd be like, I didn't finish cleaning the freaking truck. What the fuck? You know, and I would get so pissed off about it. And that captain started noticing this stuff. Like, Matt doesn't get upset about this kind of stuff, you know? What the hell is going on? And, you know, he eventually saw this, and, you know, it was at the same time, but it was almost too late when he stepped in. But thank God that everybody that stepped in. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
No, exactly.
So what I'm saying, no matter who you are on the department, whether you're a leader or not, you see something going on, say something. Speak up. If you're too afraid to approach the person, if they're being a real ignorant jackass, or just go to your company officer and say, hey, listen, Billy Bob or Susie is acting out of the norm. Let's find out what's going on. You think you could do that, Lou or Cap? Let's find out what's going on, because I think there's something really bad going on here. I don't, you know, not that they're going to hurt themselves or hurt anybody, but find out what's going on. You know, do a little bit of digging, you know, or have your company office do a little bit of digging and find out what's going on, because there could be an underlying problem. You know, that last call that you guys went to, it could have affected them. Just find out what's going on.
And that's the other thing, though, Matt, is, you know, and I'm not taking away from your story, it might not just be a call, you know.
That's right.
We deal with stuff at home. You know, I mean, I'm not, you know, we're past the hour, so I'm not going to overly elaborate, but I'm just going to, you know, when I was up at West Point, I was very irritable at work. I was dealing with some toxic people that I worked with there, you know, and I have no qualms with that. Even if the guy's listening to the show, he knows how I feel about him. He was a toxic person. It is what it is. I do not miss working with that person. However, it was affecting my time away from my family, coupled with working with this particularly one individual, was affecting my personal life with my wife. Now, you know Chrissy, you know, I mean, I'm very blessed. Yeah. I love my wife. She's a blast. She's hot, you know, and she's an awesome mom. And I almost lost my life. You know, I almost lost my wife and my kids because I was dealing with all this stuff and I'm, you know, the time away from my family and then dealing with this guy, you know, at work, and it was hurting. And that's the thing is like you said earlier, you know, we are each other's keeper, you know, we have that responsibility, whether you have rank or not, we have that responsibility to each other. But like I was saying before, even like you said, if you can't get through to the person, you bring it to your officer's attention. Those that are the officers, you have to act. You can't not act, whether you like the person or not. And that's what I was saying before with me, you know, being blessed and having gone through the positions that I've been able to get through. I've worked with people that I wouldn't hang out with, but I like everybody the same professionally. There's people I like less than others on a personal level, but I know everything I need to know about the people that I'm supposed to be serving in a leadership capacity because I have to, because I have that responsibility to make sure that they're going to be all right. And that's, I think, what people fail to realize is we deal with a lot in our personal lives and our professional lives. This is not an easy job. You know, those of us that want to act tough and think that it is, we're lying through our teeth. You know, we go through divorces. We go through losses of family members. We go through, you know, not being, you know, not having custody of our kids or seeing our kids. You know, you go through all these life-changing things that go on in your personal life. And then we also have to be on our game and expected to be the world's problem solver. And like you said, you know, where if that doesn't happen for you, that weighs heavily on you. So this is what we need to realize is psychologically, this is not an easy job. We deal with a lot of crap. And it's normal for us to go through some kind of emotion because we're not animals, like you said before. Okay? We're supposed to care. We're supposed to have sensitivity and be able to be, sympathetic and empathetic to the things that are around us. And it is our job because no one understands us more than us. It's our job to be responsible to each other, to notice if somebody's having some, you know, an off day. So that's just my two cents. Right. I apologize, Matty. You got me all excited. I wanted to jump in, you know.
Yeah, you hit that nail right on the head, brother. You know, I agree with everything you're saying. You know, duty to act for your personnel, and make sure that they get the help. You know, and for any of the junior guys out there or girls, you know, if your company officer isn't acting fast enough, like I said, sometimes this is an emergency situation. If they're not acting fast enough, go to the next company officer. You know, go to the captain, go to the battalion chief. This, you need to do something. It can't wait because it's a life or death thing with some of this. Not all of it, but some of this is going to be life or death. You know, and
even if it's not right now, it can be if it's not taken care of.
That's right. That is correct, Dave. That it could end up becoming life or death. Like you said, all the things we deal with, the turmoil, home life, trying to balance a home life, trying to balance finances, all this stuff adds up. And then you're, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, the bell rings for a car wreck, and you're expected to be a problem solver, and you get there, and, you know, there's a family of five, and, you know, only the child in the back seat survived. And you got to keep your composure. That's a tough thing to do. And I want to say to everybody that's listening, when you have these bad calls, get back to the firehouse and talk about it right away. All right. What could we have done better? How do you think you should have handled this? What's going on? How do you feel about this? I know this was a shitty call. How do you feel? Okay, listen, if this is bothering you in a couple of days, please come and see me, all right? Even if it's one-on-one, let's go have a coffee after work when we get off duty. Let's go have a coffee. And you notice I'm not saying a beer. Dave, you know I love to drink. But the drinking only makes it worse, okay? So if you start having problems, avoid the alcohol. And I know a lot of you out there right now are saying, screw you, buddy. Avoid the alcohol. As firefighters, we all like to drink, all right? I'm Irish. I love to drink. I used to drink with Dave when we worked together. I think I christened your bathroom a couple of times. Puka, too.
Yeah, a couple of times you did, yeah.
I remember her waking up in the middle of the night when I stayed over, and she's like, oh, Matty Brown, what did you do?
Yeah.
But
I think I felt more bad for Otis. He loves you, man. He snuggled up with you so good, man.
Boy.
You were his favorite person.
But, you know, get together after work. Get outside the firehouse, because sometimes being in the firehouse can be a toxic environment. And maybe I'm using the wrong choice of words by saying toxic environment, but it's related to the call. Sometimes you need to get out of the clouds, get into the sunshine. And what I mean by that is get out of the firehouse, get into the sunshine and see what's going on and talk about it. Because sometimes the firehouse has a dark cloud over it. It's not really a toxic environment, or it could be a toxic environment, but get out of the firehouse if you have to, if the people feel more comfortable getting out of the firehouse. I know some people are afraid to talk at the firehouse because they feel like everybody's listening. So get out of the firehouse with that person, you know, go grab a coffee at Starbucks, at Dunkin' Donuts or something the next morning, and talk about it, you know. And don't judge the person. That's the biggest thing I can say is don't judge the person and don't be condescending. If the person starts crying, don't make fun of them for crying. All right? This is their emotions. This is what they're going through. Be supportive. Be there for them. You know, and it stays confidential. I mean, somebody might see you from the station out at the local coffee shop or something like that, because it might be down the street from the firehouse. Hey, what were you and so-and-so talking about? Hey, we were just talking about going to the ball game or something like that. You don't, honestly, you don't have to make anything up, but it's none of their business what you're talking about if this person is confiding in you. It needs to stay confidential unless they're going to hurt themselves. And like I said, I tell all my guys now, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, call me. If there's a problem, my phone's always on. Call me, night or day. Call me, text me, whatever it is, and I'll be there. Unless I can't get away from the firehouse, you know, and I'm 40 miles away, I will be there. And, you know, even if I'm 40 miles away or at the firehouse, I'll try to get somebody to cover me, and I'll try to get to you. And if I can't get to you, I'll get somebody to you. But be there for that person. I know we all say it all the time, oh, I'll be there, you know, oh, call me, or you should have called, you know. You have to be there. And, you know, in our job, we're always there. We're always there. We're people's last resorts. When people don't know who to call, they call the fire department. We're always there. But like I keep saying, we are our brother's keeper. You need to keep an eye on this person. You need to help them and guide them through every step of the way. And, you know, that chief that drove me to Brattleboro, every night after all the, I would call them classes, but every night when we were done with all the sessions in the classes, he knew the schedule basically because he had gone through it. He called me up, you know, just to check on me and be like, Matt, how you doing, bud? You know, I was thinking about you. How was today? How did today go? And I appreciated that, you know. And I had quite a few people, including my friend, that would call me every night just to check on me and see how I was doing. And that little bit of moral support really helped. And the more I talk about this, even though this is the first time I'm publicly talking about it, the more I talk about it with firefighters in the firehouses and stuff, the better I feel about it, the more I can talk about it. And, Dave, when I first started the show tonight with you, I was so jittery and scared. And right now I feel very comfortable. I've calmed down quite a bit. You know, that's the thing, too, is with this, with my struggle, I now want to start helping people. And I feel that's my job. I feel that's what's going to help me. It's like my therapy, is I need to help other firefighters and first responders with this. And, you know, Dave, anytime we want to do another one of these I'm more than willing to help you out.
Oh, I'd love it, man. I appreciate you doing it. I know it took a lot of guts.
You know,
I'm telling you, I'm getting text messages from people, bro. Everybody loves that you're sharing your story. It's all positive.
I've gotten quite a few, too, and I haven't gotten the chance to answer any of them. Like I said, I know a couple of brothers from my department are listening. And I think you and I have a brother that's up north that's actually listening because he texts me also.
Labo.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, Labo.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Because I got a text from him.
Nice.
But
nice.
Honestly, and you know, one of the other things that's sucky about having this PTSD and all this shit going on is hypersensitivity and hyper awareness. I know, and this sucks because I'm often on a truck company. It's one of the things I'm working on with my therapist. During the summer months, part of my commute is I have to go over a bridge. And this particular bridge, they were doing construction on it, resurfacing it. And if I didn't make it to the bridge before 6 o'clock in the morning, I would be stuck in traffic. And that bridge would start shaking. It's a suspension bridge. So it would start shaking. You'd see the guy wires shaking. And I would stop panicking, you know, because I was thinking of those bridges out in Minnesota, and that's all part of this. It's all part of the PTSD and the struggle and everything. I would start thinking of that bridge out in Minnesota that collapsed, and I would get so fearful. A couple of times I almost jumped out of my truck and ran back to the toll plaza. And let me tell you, when I went through this program up in Brattleboro, they taught us, they call it hippie voodoo magic. And they taught us a lot of breathing exercises, grounding exercises. So what I would do is I'd just sit there in my truck while I was waiting for the traffic to move, and I'd start breathing. You know, breathe slowly in, forcefully breathe out, and it would start calming me down. And the next thing you know, the traffic was moving, and I was off the bridge. You know, but the heightened sensitivity of a lot of things, I'll never fly again. Because getting in an airplane now scares the living shit out of me. I never had a problem with flying before, but you get in that plane and, you know, it's like, holy crap, what's going on here? There's no way this thing should be up in the air. It weighs too much. So my plan to go to Ireland and see Ireland, I think, is squashed for a while until I get some more therapy to deal with that.
I put that one on hold for a little bit. It's not like you can stop the plane midair and run back to the toll booth on the plane, you know.
Exactly, you know. And one of the guys I did work with told me, he goes, you know, you can take some nips on the plane with you and everything. And, you know, I thank him for that greatly. You know, but I didn't think about it at the time when I was on the plane, you know, carrying some nips with me on my carry-on. I didn't know you could do that, but I guess TSA allows up to 6 nips or something now, and
well,
that would have been
news
just
to
enough.
Me. That's good to know.
Cranberry and vodka drink. So, hey Dave, I'm gonna have to let you go, brother, because my phone's about to die. I hate to cut
you
short.
Yeah, you're good, brother. Listen, thank you so much for sharing your story, brother. I really appreciate it. I love you to death. And
I love you too, brother.
You know, yeah.
And everybody,
keep doing your thing. You stay safe.
And like I said, keep an eye on your brother and sister firefighters. If you know something out of the ordinary, speak up. Ask them questions.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Dave.
Thanks,
I love
thanks,
it, brother.
You be safe.
All right, take care, pal.
You too, brother. Everyone
right,
for listening,
bye-bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. I was joined by my brother and great guest, Lieutenant Matty Brown. He shared a great story. Anybody that is having a tough time that needs help, like I said, reach out, talk to a brother, talk to a sister, talk to, you know, anybody you work with. Nobody understands us better than us. Call 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-8255. If you're in the IFF, even if you're not, if you're a firefighter, call 1-888-532-7988. The International Association of Firefighters has a suicide prevention program that they designed. That's the phone number to call. You can also go to IFFRecoveryCenter.com, and you can also go to suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Addition to that, Matt, we didn't get to talk about it tonight, is a big advocate on service dogs. So there's a bunch of different information out there for service dogs, for PTSD, etc. listen, we are each other's keeper. I want everybody to remember that. If you're in a position of leadership, we're not. We have a responsibility to each other. This was a great show. It was a lot of information needed to be talked about. I appreciate everybody listening. God bless. I want everybody to stay safe. And thank you so much. This has been Dave McGlynn with Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success.
Thanks for tuning into Fire Engineering Talk Radio.